photography, you know, professional photography. Today is going through questions that devotees have on their particular subjects, like that. So then, we're taking this clarification between Brahmins and Vaishnavas. Okay, so if we're based on guna, the definition of a Brahmin. Right. So based on guna and karma, one is the mode of goodness and performs permissible activities. By cultivating the mode of goodness, anyone may become elevated to the mode of goodness. So then the questions that arise. Is being in the mode of goodness a necessity and sufficient definition of a Brahman? Is anyone in the mode of goodness to be considered a Brahman? This would also mean that anyone may become a Brahman. See, brahmana means the approach, because if we're going to get analytical, then the approach we should take is analyzing the word. Right? So someone who knows or is in pursuit of Brahman, that's brahmana. Right? So one who knows Brahman, that's a brahmana. One who understands the supreme Brahman as a person, that's a Vaishnava. That's the difference. So the lifestyle would be in the mode of goodness, the activities would be in the mode of goodness, the focus is on Brahman, but it's a matter of what level of Brahman. So some are a Brahman, some are Paramatma, some Bhagavan. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So those who are at the level of Bhagavan, that's what we call Vaishnava. Mm-hmm. Like that. Doesn't mean they don't understand the others or are not functioning within that, but it'll all be connected back to the Lord. That's how you would define, as opposed to just the mode of goodness, because a cow, the body's in the mode of goodness, but the soul's in ignorance, otherwise why not an animal? Does that make sense? Then how, since one cannot change the nature, one doesn't change, so you have varna and ashram. So the point is where Brahman is actually understood is in ashram, not in varna. According to one's nature, you know, or one's development, one applies that in the performance of one's devotion, one's service, you know, one's varna duties according to nature. So is the Brahman being situated so strong in that brahminical lifestyle that that's enough for them, that's satisfying for them. Therefore, their varna duties are also the same thing. Right? There's no, technically not much difference between the varna and ashram of the Brahman. Well, but there is in everybody else. Because the lifestyle of the Kshatriya is that of a Brahman, but his varna duties is that of a Kshatriya. Right? Because that means everybody in the Vedic system will get up early, you know, do some spiritual activity, they have guru, they have shastra, there's cleanliness, respect of authority, there's duties based on higher authority, so everybody's following that. Does that make sense? That's why we can call Varnashram brahminical culture, because it is. We see in Manu, the first six chapters, all it's defining is brahminical ashram. There isn't another ashram. You know what I'm saying? But there are other duties in the way of economics. Does that make sense? So no one's going to change their varnic nature according to varna means according to economics. You know what I'm saying? But someone can serve. Does that mean you get to carry around like a wooden sword or anything? So, so that means if someone is a manager by nature, that's not going to change. But in their ashram side, that may change from having a lifestyle of ignorance up to one of goodness. So that anybody could change. You know, what mode they function under. But as far as their occupation, that won't change. If someone's not a manager, it doesn't matter how great a devotee is, he still won't be a manager. It doesn't change. Did I hear someone say yes? We have to be able to, generally what we do is we don't distinguish between varna and ashram. You know, like that. So, yeah. So that's the principle. So no one changes that, but one can change that one is living, you know, a lifestyle like a Shudra up to one's living a lifestyle like a Brahmin. But it won't, still won't change his occupation. Does that make sense? Like that. Does that answer those questions? See, in other words, it's the approach that you take. Because that then will answer all this. The point is, the difficulty is, in the modern academy, there's no... It means they have kind of a standard of questioning. But, so as long as it's seen that you don't believe in it, but you have... You're intellectually intrigued by it, so that you come up with some very interesting ways of putting the facts and everything together that makes it intellectually stimulating to read. That's the goal, that's the ideal. But what perspective you use to do that, that's not defined. And as long as the intellectual element is there, you know, could be perceived, then it's considered good. What will be left is what though the unspoken or unnoticed will be the, I'd say, the element of the mind of what aspects it accepts and rejects. Because speculation simply means the mind is finding different ways to somehow or another get something from an environment. So it's like you have something. So what are the ways we could approach it? You know, like in here, you have this guy here. We could also get into what tools he used, what kind of brush he used, and why he used that particular brush made by that specific German company that used only, you know, gray squirrel, you know, hairs from the middle portion of the tail. And if that had any effect on his efficiency as an archaeologist, because he was able to remove the dust in a different way, and so that somehow or another inspired him to work harder, or it created the dust in such a way that it actually permeated the air, and that fine dust, when he breathed it, it had this chemical effect, and it generated more, pheromones, I think. So that gave him that drive that we didn't see in other archaeologists. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So those kind of approaches aren't so important for us. You know what I'm saying? So the thing is to, Prabhupada says, is the trick is you have to catch the fish but not get wet. You know what I'm saying? So as long as they see the nicely intellectually presented things, words are used in a particular way that doesn't indicate, you know, as long as it's, you know, this is how the Gaudiyas think, then that's fine. You just can't say this is the way it is. And as long as you follow those two rules, if it's intellectually stimulating, it's great. That's all. They don't have a rule that you can't think the way we naturally think. We just articulate it in a way that they're comfortable with it. Does that make sense? So that's what I'm saying is, don't take the mode of goodness as the what do you call it? to name it poker, but there's some tell. Mm-hmm. Right? This is not the tell. Like that. It'll be a major element, but the real point is that they're following the Vedic authority, the lifestyle they're following, and that's what makes it Brahminical. Then if that's connected to Vishnu, then that's Vaishnava. But Vishnu meaning as devotional service, it's favorable to Vishnu. Otherwise you do have the Brahmins in Panchapasana, they worship Vishnu, you know, as being the incarnation of goodness, but they don't think he's transcendental. You know, so you're Satyanarayan puja and stuff like this, that's all in that. Does that make sense? Is that it? Okay, are we done there? Okay. Definition of Vaishnava. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then one who's chanted Krishna's name once, Bhaktivinoda, ordinary, was born as Vaishnava, dresses like one, believes in Krishna, respects the devotees, but does not follow strictly. And then transcendental follows strictly. Here it's actually whether they're connected to the Sampradaya or not, because he calls one as Samanya and the other Sampradayak. So they've actually taken initiation, they're committed to the process of Bhajana Kriya. The other ones are doing as they, you know, as they feel, as they've grown up with, and things like that. So this means that there's a commitment to the process of Bhajana Kriya rather than following it just by habit, because that's been the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. That makes a difference. So, yeah. Then Bhakti Siddhanta, Brahman is the highest level of realization. I mean, you mentioned that, is that they know Brahman, so the highest level is Bhagavan. Prabhupada uses all, but mainly one who performs devotional service and has some love for Krishna. So essentially one is a devotee who performs devotional service. But that's the point of the highest realization means is Bhagavan, and then Bhagavan, then it's favorable towards Bhagavan. Like that. So then we would say that that's devotional service. Now, pure devotional service would be free from karma, jnana. That's what we're trying to get to. Right? So that means all of these will fit in. So one who's chanted once, then you know he'll be an ordinary devotee. But when he commits himself to the process, that's when he'll be sampradayak, right? And even at the sampradayak, so it's, or you can take the broad range of Brahminical practitioners, and one who worships Brahman, Bhagavan. So then, with even in that, you have levels between those who are. Karmic jnana is more prominent, or where it's less prominent, until where it's not at all. Does that make sense? So the ruler there is understanding the Bhagavan aspect, and then pure devotional service. You know, the closer one gets to that, the more that's established. What you left out is Vishwanath. Here, if you really want to have fun. Which is when you come to prema, then you're a devotee. Before that, you're practicing. So then it makes it very clear what the center point is. And then all this is true if. See, the thing is intellectually you can come to so many premises. But whether that premise is the central premise, that's the difficulty in the modern academy, is that they'll take something that's not necessarily prominent and, you know, intellectually present it from some means. Whatever the point is, as long as you can produce a 300-page paper with enough references that basically is consistent enough to show that that perspective could intellectually work, then you're done. But you could say it would work that way, but then you're dealing with 8,400,000 perspectives as opposed to one. You know, so that's that would be interesting, right? Professors are sitting there, they've gotten the paper, they all glance at it, and you know, somebody comes in later, hey, Edward, come on, check out this, you know, alligator, you know, how you perspective here, as I get it down to the various. So. Okay, being a Brahman is based only on being in the mode of goodness. No, being in the mode of goodness, but how are you defining goodness here?
Symptoms. About symptoms.
But symptoms, what are these symptoms?
Pains.
Okay.
Knowledge.
Okay.
Calm. Religion.
But those would be, I think, that would naturally come after. Means I would tend to stick towards, especially the 18th chapter of Gita definitions. It means the modes of nature you can see there, but I would stick, those are symptoms. I would stick to the 18th chapter. It means you're following the Vedic authority and doing it as a sense of duty. That's the mode of goodness. These others will naturally be symptomatic. Something who can do that will have to have respect, have to have cleanliness, have to have these. Those would be like the prerequisites are natural, but the point is that the difference between the three modes, the most, you know, direct and even, you know, clear, is that mode of goodness means you're following the Vedic authority in as Naishkarma. Mode of passion means you're following the authority, but it's sakam, it's not nishkam. And the mode of ignorance means you're not following authority. You're just doing whatever you feel like. You know what I'm saying? So that's why this modern approach of, you know, whatever people feel like, and we have to consider their feelings, that yes, that's okay, but to consider without the Vedic authority, that's the mode of ignorance. Does that make sense? So that's the weakness of all these modern approaches, is that they're driven by ignorance. But people will think that it's goodness because they're caring for the other person. But the only reason they care is because they feel like it. But if they don't feel like it, they don't care. Because they don't feel like caring for a conservative. So that means their actual position of caring is simply whimsical. You know what I'm saying? So that's the easiest way to be able to tell goodness. So then if you say being a Brahman is based only on being the mode of goodness, means he's following the Vedic authority and following that lifestyle, right? But at the same time, as you would also have to see, is that he would have a particular occupation, you know. But sometimes if the occupation is not available, then you have to, you still can only tell by the lifestyle. So then you get those symptoms, but the core of it's going to be following the Vedic authority. Because otherwise you have the person who's, you know, living out in the forest and grows his own organic vegetables and, you know, is nice to the animals and all that. They're in the mode of goodness, but it's still, they're not Brahminical. It may be that they have a Brahminical nature, which could be occupationally, but it's not that that is their lifestyle. So the combination of varna and ashram will define. You know what I'm saying? They're a nice person, and probably if they took up devotional service, you would see they might be Brahminical, but it's not because they're living out in the forest and all that that defines them, because they're living out in the forest because it's nice, it's good. It's not because it's uplifting, there's Brahman aspect. You know, that they're knowing the Lord. Does that make sense? Disaster has been averted. Okay. So, a transcendental Vaishnava someone who performs pure devotional service in the mode of goodness. So you could say yes, or means but pure devotional service here, one could also say is that he is trying to obtain that, not necessarily that they are on that platform. Even someone who's attempting it would be in that category. But just someone who's obtained it would be, you know, better situated. And the devotees who have not attained the level of goodness and whose service is not pure are ordinary Vaishnavas. No, it's a matter of have they committed to the process. Ordinary means they're not committed to the process. It means they like it. They come around, they visit the temple, you know, they add a few things to their life, you know, but they haven't committed to the surrender to the process. You know, so like that, they haven't taken initiation, they haven't committed themselves to it. Or it's not that they haven't taken initiation, they're planning to, they want to, they're preparing themselves, but they haven't, that hasn't happened, but it's still the same commitment. You understand? Does that make sense? What's the difference between you have a boy and a girl and they go out and they've been dating for a long time? So what is it that makes the difference between the relationship is serious or not? You understand? It's the commitment. You know, so the boy, it's great, it's a great time, they go out, they do all the things they like. But in the girl's mind, is it serious or not? Right? The point is there's commitment, that's all. So that's what makes the difference between ordinary and transcendental. One was just following the process by, you know, habit or association. That's ordinary. One was committed to following it. You know, no matter how good or not they are at it, that's still then sampradaya. Right? Now, of course, one would say is that if their practices aren't in line with, then you know, one would say that that's not well situated, so they would have to define where they're situated like that. But it's, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because commitment means they would be trying to follow the main principles. Is that okay? Okay, two. If a Brahmin is more than just someone in the mode of goodness, and one has to be born to be a Brahmin, as it cannot be obtained. One has to be born to be a Brahmin, cannot be obtained. So, but if one's not born, you couldn't obtain anything anyway. You mean born in a Brahmin.
Okay, not that.
But then if we're discussing about the unborn, we're talking about the Brahmin, right? And so then the Brahmin is already, you know, Brahmin, so like that, so. So you have to be careful about your terms. Transcendental Vaishnava is someone with brahminical qualifications and performs pure devotional service in the mode of goodness. You could say someone's transcendentally situated because of that, but I would use transcendental here, meaning that the mode that the pure devotional service is their goal. Like that. So that would put them within that, though they may be neophyte, Madhya, or Uttam, like that. So then you may see more brahminical qualities and more of the mode of goodness, or less, depending upon their attachments. So someone may have more naturally mode of goodness qualities from previous piety, but not necessarily be that focused devotion. And someone else may be more focused devotion, but they don't have the previous material qualifications to be situated in goodness. Like that. So you're always going to get these seeing the conflicting situations. That's why the devotees are not easily understandable like that, because of the broad range. And those devotees who don't have brahminical qualities and have not attained the mode of goodness and do not perform devotional service are ordinary. So discuss that. And then the evil as kovet kezik kobi azok. I don't won't be able to give much comment on that. Is this correct? If yes, then is it the Pancharatra Vaishnava initiation that makes one who was not born with the brahminical qualities attain those qualities and makes him a transcendental Vaishnava? That aspect is yes, because you're changing the lifestyle from one that's not necessarily in goodness, or even if it is, to the quality of pure goodness means it's being done for the pleasure of the Lord. So that the Pancharatrika, so that would be there. But the Pancharatrika initiation doesn't change the Varna designation. That we have to understand. It means what are his skills? That's what remains, because one has the Pancharatrika didn't change the body, right? So you still have the same body. So that means the same senses, the same intelligence, the same mind. So that means that defines what are the qualities that one can perform. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Not that. Yeah. Does training, elevation to the mode of goodness and Pancharatra devotion of initiation together enable anyone to become a Brahman? Stated many times by Srila Prabhupada. Yes, because they're Brahman by understanding, realization, by lifestyle, but it still doesn't mean that they're Brahman by occupation. You know what I'm saying? If they're engaged in the preaching and that kind of full-time service, then anybody, no matter what their nature is, it's within the Brahmanical context. But it may not be that the specific quality needed to perform the service that they're doing within the preaching effort is brahminical. You know what I'm saying? You know, he fixes the cars so that they go out on sankirtan. So that's a mechanical, so that would put it generally within the shudra category. Right? So, but he's doing it so that the preaching can go on, so his mentality is that of is brahminical. Okay? So that's why we'll say the Brahman, Vaishnava can do anything. Does that make sense? So anything could be connected, but at the same time, is still someone will only be able to perform those material qualifications that they have material qualification for. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, so that's not going to change. So that's why it's not that, you know, we can only do traditional brahminical occupational duties in the performance of brahminical activities. We'll do whatever needs to be done. We'll clean the toilets, we'll fix the car, we'll do all these things. But unless you have the nature of ability, you can't do it. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that we're unwilling to do it, it's just, you know, when somebody's good at it, somebody's not. You know, so if you learn to change a tire or something. Is that what I'm saying? What is the significance and role of this initiation? What does the bell metal and the gold symbolize? What become what? Initiation means one's committing to the process of siksha seriously, because it's through instruction that one is elevated. So by instruction, so initiation means you commit to following that instruction as one's life and soul. That's the point. And it's personal, so it's coming through a person. Right? There's a central point that, therefore, that person is where everything's going to go back to. There's always a reference point. Bell metal to gold, because you're taking something of a lesser quality and changing it to a higher quality. Because gold has value, bell metal has the potential, but it's still not gold. So it's by association that it becomes changed, because the bell metal becoming gold, there's a catalyst. It's not just on its own by some mystic method, there's a catalyst. So that catalyst is this, you know, the instruction of the spiritual master. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going to change the bell metal to gold. So that recognition, so that goal means that one's life is dedicated to Krishna consciousness. That's what the goal is. It's not that it's the mode of goodness. Right? Because Prabhupada would support the devotees, even though much of the time, you know, they're mentality might have had elements of passion and ignorance in it. Right? But because their focus and their commitment was to Krishna consciousness, therefore it worked. Does that make sense?
So the main point is that there is different lifestyle Brahmin and occupational Brahmin and Brahmana.
Yeah, but
this is the main point.
Yeah, you could say that, but someone who is a, what we would classify in Varnashram as a Brahmin, mm-hmm. means he is following the lifestyle and occupation, because they mm-hmm. go together. You know, it's just like someone like Vena. Okay, he could manage nicely. So, occupationally, he was a Kshatriya, but his lifestyle, you know, his opposition to the Vedas and the Brahmins and the Yajnas, then that would mean on that side there's a weakness. That's why he's not good as a, in that position. Or Duryodhana, they're expert Kshatriyas as far as occupation goes. But in the lifestyle, even the lifestyle, the structure is correct, but the mentality is wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? So because the Kshatriya is also supposed to be Brahminical by mentality, and that Brahman is what's important, but for him, then his social position was more important than Brahman, because the Lord and his devotees were not, you know, his partiality. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's where the weakness is. Yes?
When you say lifestyle, then it has to mean that that lifestyle is connected at least to Brahman.
Yes.
So if there's just piety and the occupation is like a teacher or a priest or whatever.
It's you could say it's that way, but it's unscientific. Like the West means everybody's following Varnashram. The difference is you can follow scientifically or not. Just like, let's say, as a rough example, everybody is cooking. Now, whether it's scientific and it's edible or not, that's a different point. You know what I'm saying? They just know if you go and you take the can of beans and throw it in the pot and kind of heat it up, or even better yet, just open the top, stick it in the microwave and hit the button. Then, so you can say it's cooking, but it's not very scientific. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, your doctors and, you know, how you say? With care, I say, lawyers and, you know, how you say, educators, then these would be your Brahminical class. They have that nature, that's their occupation. You know, those who are dealing with administration, you know, not the paper pushing level, not the bureaucratic level, but above that, that's, you know, your, especially your army and that, your officers and all that. You'll have that element, you know, even within sometimes your, like the mafia or something like that, they have that elephant. They're left over from Hannibal, right? They got up to Sicily and then they just kind of like stayed there. So, and then they transported those elephants over to New York, you know, like that. So, like that. But there was a problem because somehow the Jews knew something about elephants, so it took them a while to get established that they were the main ones as opposed to the Jews and stuff. Okay, so we were discussing something other than elephants.
Education.
No, before that. You like that. Okay, then Vaishyas, that's very obvious. They're making money. They're the ones generating the head of generation of economic development. Those are Vaishyas. Shudras means they're working for somebody. That's all. So, but it's unscientific because you have a hospital, it's supposed to be a Brahminical institution, but who runs it? Vaishyas for business. Does that make sense? So it's unscientific. The mixing of who should do what and like the lines aren't clear. So because of those overlaps, then there's problems. You know, a bureaucrat has more power than he should. Right? So the bureaucrat, who is an ordinary person, because he happens to be working for the Kshatriya, that doesn't make him greater than another citizen. That just means that's his responsibility, right? The Kshatriya class, they're in a superior person, the Vaishyas and Shudras, but the bureaucrat feels he's in that same position. So that's unscientific. You know, like that. Does that make sense? So Varnashram means that scientifically one understands how things work. Then one's able to discern and put things in their proper place. So it's not that, oh, we're introducing the cat. No, those are already there. It's already there. And if they say, no, but in the Western, anybody could become a teacher. You could say, yes, the school is open to anybody, but only the person who can actually sit down for all those years and focus in that way and get that can become a teacher. So that means you're still going back to what's the nature. But the idea of the modern is just saying, I could do it if I want. The Vedic is also, we could say, you could do it if you want, but realistically you're not going to. You know? So that's the only difference. So it's still open. But it's just a matter of you have to actually do it. You know, you're a teacher because you know the subject and you are a teacher. That's why you're a teacher. Right? You know, if it's just a job, then you're not actually a teacher. You know, you're in the occupation of it, you're not an educator. You know, is that yes.
And does it mean that there are to tell who's a Brahmana and what kind of Brahmana he or she is, we have three categories, so the lifestyle, the occupation, and the mentality? Or they are related to each other?
Yeah, I would say the mentality would be they're related. They're related. But the mentality would be part of the lifestyle. Yeah, I would say it's a mentality, a subdivision. Your major is going to be the lifestyle and the occupation. But within that mentality would have to be there. Because that's always, in dealing with somebody, with something, the proper mood is always important. If you don't have the right mood, it won't work. Just like let's say one devotee I knew, you know, they were into like the Vedic things, they do puja and everything like that, but the nature was that it was Kshatriya nature. So because of that, they would much of the time end up in a teaching environment. But for them it was a challenge. You know, the student, you know, was something, they're stupid, so it's a challenge. Not a challenge to get them to know, but a challenge means, you know, here we had a bone to pick here. It's, you know, how is it you're so stupid? You can't understand this. It's been explained to you. It's very obvious. You know, why can't you get it together? So it's not that they're teaching them. So the Kshatriya nature would come out because the attitude was different. Right? Does that make sense? So that they're you're taking them as something to fight or like that, as opposed to that the seniority is there because you have the knowledge and they don't, and so by you giving it the proper way, then you take it on. So they're not taking on. It's not a masculine feminine relationship. It would be masculine to masculine relationship, right? Because you're not taking them as dependents. Therefore, it's your obligation to make the dependent understand. You know what I'm saying? Well, the teacher is the masculine position, so you have to adjust to the audience.
You have to adjust to
the teacher has to adjust. It means the teacher has the knowledge, And that knowledge is valuable for any variety of audience, but depending on the audience you're dealing with, then you have to deliver it according to the audience. Right? Let's say you're going to speak on a subject, and the room is full of professors. You're going to speak differently than if it was full of sixth graders. Like that. So the teacher, it's his business to adjust.
It's more feminine.
No, that's masculine. Masculine is who adjusts. Feminine is who doesn't adjust. You haven't figured that out yet. No, that's masculine. The masculine means he's not adjusting and the other person's not, so it's a fight.
Who's so not adjusting?
No, but it's because it's not masculine and feminine. Masculine and masculine, there's no need of that, doesn't have that aspect of adjusting.
So, tertiary is masculine and masculine?
No, masculine to masculine.
Yes.
If two men are there, men are individuals, so they don't have to adjust to the other persons. It's just you let them be who they are, and you're who you are, and nobody minds. You don't have to adjust it because they're like this, therefore you have to adjust everything to that. Did we open a can of worms here?
He's supposed to protect.
But that's, yes, but if he's dealing with the citizens, you know. So in management, he would do like that, but in the classroom, he wouldn't, because it's an intellectual area, so he's unable to apply his occupational perspective in the educational environment. That's why he shouldn't teach. That's why Brahmins teach and Kshatriyas don't. Right, because the citizen is obviously junior. Right?
The student is junior.
The student is junior, but he's not able to perceive that. You know. Because the thing is how the Kshatriya will deal with his assistants will be different than a Brahmin deals with his. Because a Kshatriya's assistants are who? Army, you know, military, police, bureaucrats. You know, so he'll deal with them, you know, in a more practical down, you know, just here it is, this is the way it is, and if you catch it, you're qualified. If you don't catch it, you shouldn't be here. Does that make sense? So the Brahmin will figure out how to make them understand. You know, ultimately, of course, some of that is applied. You know, does that make sense? But what we're having to catch here is the flavor is different in how they're going to apply that. And he's like, the Kshatriya will figure out, okay, so we can teach them all the nice military tactics and all that, you know, but we're in the barracks and everything is orderly and organized. What happens if you're out in the battlefield and the fighting is going on constantly for 3 days and they can't sleep? Are they going to be able to function? So therefore, they will try to generate that kind of environment or experience in the barracks, even though they could go to sleep, but they don't. They make them stay up all night and do all kinds of crazy things and stuff like that. And that will then prepare them for that environment. But they figured that out because they were on the battlefield and they saw that their people, though, if everything was properly organized, it's daytime, they're out in the field, it works like clockwork. But if something goes wrong, then they're unable to function. So therefore, then they're looking at it from the masculine to feminine. So how to get it where they'll be able to function, so then they'll adjust their training of them to accomplish that. So that will be done, but the method of dealing with it is slightly different. Does that make sense? You know, the teacher, when he walks in the first day into the classroom, then, and he doesn't know the people, then, you know, he tries to introduce and get to know and things like that, because knowledge is the basis, right? But let's say you get on the bus to drive to the military base, So the first thing to do when that, getting on the bus, everybody's nice, but once you're on the bus and the bus closes, then the drill sergeant stands up and starts yelling at you, and it's full of men. Okay, girls, you know, like that, this is how it's going to be, and this and that. He just harasses you till you get there, and when the door opens, it doesn't stop, you know. And so it's just a different method. So that's great for training if you're trying to make a soldier. But it's not what you'd use in a classroom. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But it's not clear for me how to relate.
So you've been using this other technique. You wanted to know how it's
a chevalier. How to create relationship? Is there any between the varnas and these principles of masculinity and femininity in the meaning of, in the sense of adjusting?
But means, but the varnas meaning? Does each varna do it?
Yeah. Or
of course. And the point is, the masculine feminine principle just means who's the active and who's the passive. Right. Means if you have these, let's take a classroom. Means the teacher is the active principal, right? The class is the passive. In fact, if it was up to them, they'd probably fall asleep, right? So, you know, the teacher has to create that dynamic by which it inspires the students, right? So they have to find that, what's the mood, what's that? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point, is that according to the audience, that's how the teacher will speak. So if they're inspired, he can speak in one way. If they're not inspired, he has to speak in a way to get them inspired. Right? It's, in other words, it's his responsibility to make it, the educational process happen. That's why he's in a senior position. Right? Because if the students were, then they would be. So that's the difficulty with the modern, is that the teacher's just kind of like assisting the students figure out the learning process on their own. You know, it's already inherently there, you simply have to draw it out, and all these kind of, they sound fabulous, but they have not a whole lot to do with reality. Because the only thing that's inherently there in the soul is the transcendental knowledge. So that you could draw out. We don't say we're putting it in, we're drawing it out. But they want them to know, you know, Greek mythology, that you have to put in. You know, it's just because there's nothing there, so you have to say, okay, this is, you know, whoever it is, you know, this is, oh, I'm getting mixed up now, I can't remember who's, you have Thor, you have Zeus, and you have Odin, and who's this, who's, I can't remember, you know. But otherwise, that knowledge is not there, because it's material, it's temporary, that's not the knowledge that the soul contains. So these principles, any philosophy anybody comes up with is not inherently wrong. Its wrongness is its lack of connection to the Lord. So if you make the connection, then it's valid. But the problem point is when you make the connection, it means you have to readjust it into the perspective of God consciousness. Right, devotees sometimes try to leave it in its modern context and connect it to Krishna and think the work is done. But the point is, the perspective that we use is because that's what's pleasing to Krishna. Like that. Because God already is everything, you know. So it's not that you have to. It's not that you have to connect it to make it God. It's already connected. But the point is if you want to take part in it, you have to recognize. So you recognize this connection, then you're part of the scene. But if you don't recognize, it's still connected. Is it still Krishna? So in other words, the teacher takes the responsibility to make that connection. That's what the teacher's doing. You know, just like the leader on the battlefield, he takes that responsibility that everybody will be able to function and perform their duties by his arrangements. You're saying that, so the principle is the same. It means you're dealing with the market, And so you have to deal according to the nature of the market, right? The market's going up, you deal in one way, it's going down, you deal in another way. You know, you're dealing with this particular commodity, then you're going to deal differently than if you're dealing with a different commodity. You know, like if I'm selling perfume, I will deal with the market differently than I'm selling, let's say, pig iron. Right? Because I don't have to make anything glamorous or great out of pig iron. The guy needs it, he buys it. Your quality is good, your price is good, it's done. You don't have to have a fancy showroom. You know, you don't have to have, you know, anything like that. You know, you know what I'm saying? But if you're dealing with the perfumes, you have to deal with that whole, that presentation. And the businessman has to know how to make that adjustment. So that puts him in the masculine position, the rest of the feminine. You know, the shudra that he's dealing with, whatever it is, his skill, but he has to deal according to how it's working. He's changing the tire, and the lug nut is stuck. So he has to deal with the stuckness of that nut. Otherwise, he'll break it. You know, so he has to be able to apply force, but only how much it'll tolerate, and it won't take more. So then he goes and gets some, you know, that fine oil that will cut through, you know, whatever it all is, the heavy oil or dust that's in there. And then from that, loosen it up, he'll take a hammer and whack it a bit. You know, and if he's Russian, he'll whack a lot, you know, stuff like that. And so then, you know, in this way, he will, according to the how the nut is responding, he's going to apply technique. Does that make sense? So it's still the masculine feminine principle. Does that make sense? It's just whether you're applying it to knowledge, to protection, to, I'd say, economics, or to, you know, arts and sciences. That's all. But just because people know that doesn't mean they know how to apply it to the ashram. Because many times people who are very expert in varna are terrible in ashram. Because they can't see it's still the same principles. You know, then it becomes equal. Does that make sense? Let us give another element to the masculine that will make it a little more clear. The feminine only has one manifestation, the dependent, right? But the masculine has two, right? Your Atmarama, and then who's involved in interacting with the dependent. Does that make sense? So one is with rasa, consideration of rasa, one's not. Understand?
Not really.
It means Krishna is independent, so he's Atmarama, so he can just his nature of existence is complete in itself, so nothing else is required. Right? You know, so the man can sit there on the couch with the remote and do that for hours and not interact with anybody and be, how you say, perfect and complete. Right? You understand? You know, he can go into the garage and just, you know, like that. He can just exist. You understand? Women don't just exist. There has to be an interactive element. Right? But when the masculine comes into that environment, then he has to act according to the rules of that environment. So the difficulty is the man applies the rules of masculine and feminine at his workplace, but when he comes home, he tends to click into Atmarama. And so therefore there's no relationship, there's no interaction. And then he can't figure out why his wife left him and his kids are, you know, out on the street and don't care for her. But it's that simple. Right? Because to deal in relationship is work. And so they figure that I did that at work, so then now at home I don't do that. No, now you still do that, just the environment of where you do it changes. So, does that make sense? Is that working better now?
Yes. But you just insist on the first question on Brahmana. This is very useful, but so the lifestyle, I don't understand the word, what you mean by that. And,
by which?
Lifestyle.
Lifestyle means is according to the Veda, they're rising early in the morning, the Brahma Muhurta, they're taking a bath, they're cleaning themselves, they're engaged in some kind of sadhana at that time, according to their particular line or, you know, shastra that they're following. You know, so what would be the sadhana, yajna or puja or meditation or, you know, what aspect would be what they're doing, you know, how they would deal with eating, you know, dressing, living in their house, you know, that whole environment, how they would deal with that, you know, the standards of cleanliness and, you know, like that, regulation. Then occupation would be then what they would do to maintain that. Because your occupation generates a facility to maintain your ashram.
Yeah, but the third, the mentality, it's not familiar for me how to relate.
It means if you're talking in the Vedic, it's not a problem because the mentality and lifestyle go together. Where it comes up is in kind of connection with these questions is that you're having a person in a Western environment who lives a regulated lifestyle, generally orderly and clean on one level. You know, you go into their house, it's orderly, their schedule's orderly, they get up in the morning fairly early. They tend towards knowledge, they tend towards, you know, good works, good nature, good, you know, like that. They might even have a nice garden or something which they can appreciate. So it appears that the element of goodness is there. That's what we're talking about. What we're saying is so that one, because if that person did take up Krishna consciousness or took up the Vedic culture, then most likely they would fit in naturally to the Brahminical position. So underlyingly, they have the potential of the Brahminical, but it's not scientifically applied. So therefore, we won't call it Brahminical because their lifestyle isn't based on authority, so it is whimsical. So even within the mode of goodness, I mean mode of ignorance, then it may be predominantly goodness, right? Because each mode, you can have all three modes. So they would be a goodness of ignorance or goodness of passion. Does that make sense? So when they take up the devotional process, then you'll see these things come out. You know, then it becomes very easily applied into. So they're able to follow the program very nicely. Cleanliness, all these things, studying is very easy for them because that's their natural lifestyle. But their mentality before was just, it's good, I like it. You know, this is a superior lifestyle because it's based on knowledge and goodness and all that, while the common person, you know, it's just based on consumerism or hedonism or, you know, just money or social position and power. And so that has all these base elements to it. So they'll feel that they're superior because they're leading more of a lifestyle that tends towards goodness, but they can't articulate that. You know what I'm saying? So it's only the haziness and the definition is only to be able to accommodate that aspect that there would be, well, they're regulated, but this guy's regulated, and you know, the Brahmins are clean, but this guy's clean. But one place is probably where you could say, it's where you've noticed the major difference in cleanliness, I mean, in all these, is the cleanliness would be purity, while this other person will never have purity. They'll only have orderliness and tidiness and lack of dust and dirt, you know what I'm saying? But the purity is there.
Hygienic.
Yeah, they won't have. It might even be hygienic in that they wash their hands, you know, either before or after they go to the toilet, you know, like that. I only mentioned both because, you know, he deals with the French. So the French wash their hands before going to the toilet, the English after. It's just a matter of priority. Just to accommodate all. Don't want to upset anybody here.
So Brahminical lifestyle is full of Ashandharma.
Yeah, Brahminical means it's based on the Veda. Right? But as we said, a human life means it will always be broken up according to this, because even you take any culture, even the tribals and that, it's still broken up. You know, some more, some less. You always have the leadership. Means even you have the Aboriginal tribe, there's the chief leader, you know, the chieftain. Then, you know, and other leaders. Then you're going to have the people that they tell what to do. And then you're going to have their witch doctor. Right, because the witch doctor is the person who trains everybody, takes care of medicine, you know, gives, you know, advice on, you know, family dealings and all. So you do have your Brahmin Kshatriya shooters, just in here is, you know, as hunter-gatherers or as like that, then the Vaishya element is kind of missing, because it's only through the element of the warrior, you know, they just take, they fight, they take. So does that make sense? So you don't have that much development. But it still will be broken down. Is that okay? So that ended the Brahminical. Now we move on to the Varnashram aspect.
So the first question.
Yeah, that was the first one. Fortunately, there's only two questions. And this one's short. Okay, realizing Varnashram in modern Western societies. What does it mean for you to realize the Varnashram in the West? It means that they realize that what's already there can be organized more scientifically, and the problems that they're facing will go away by organizing it more scientifically. Right. What's the problem in modern medicine? You know, for the common person. What's the problem in modern medicine for the common person?
He has to pay for it.
He has to pay for it. And how much does he have to pay for it? A lot. A lot, right? Why does he have to pay a lot? You know, why should that scan cost you, you know, 1,000 euros? You know what I'm saying? Like that. It doesn't need to cost that. Because there is the thing, if you go and stand in the line for the government place, you know, you can do it for 30 euros. So that means, technically, it only costs them 30 euros. You know, and that's including maintaining the machine and pay for the technician to run it and stuff like that. So, you know, the problem is because it's run, the Vaishyas are in control of the economics. It means that the pharmaceuticals is the biggest, I think, money spinner in the world. But that's being controlled not by Brahmins, you know, not by doctors, it's being controlled by businessmen. You know, so you have a drug, like let's say an aspirin. It's very common, everybody needs it, there's nothing special about it, and you can't really get too... It would look too bad if you charged too much for it, because it's for common pain. So it costs you practically nothing to make, and you sell it for very cheap, right? But let's say you take something like Viagra, like that. Now, that costs the same amount to make as the aspirin, but you can sell it for, you know, 50 times the price because of the value that people place on it. You know what I'm saying? That's business. So that's the problem, is that a Brahminical area is controlled by business, right? Or education. It means that the person is qualified, they should be able to get into any qualified university. You know, but the amount of money that it takes to get in is very great. Why? Because it's a business. You know what I'm saying? The teachers, generally speaking, are Brahminical. But the people who run the university are not necessarily so it makes money. Otherwise, why? Now, just you go back, let's say, a few years back, before when online education was just starting. Now, did Harvard and Oxford and all them, did they allow online education? No. Because how can you control this? How do you know that the person who says he's your student isn't somebody else? You know, how do you tell? You can't tell. You know, it could be the person's mother's written all the essays. You know, you can't tell. So they immediately said, we're not getting involved in this because this is inferior education. So all the small little ones got involved because then they make money. Right, so it puts them on the map. And so when that becomes so big that everybody's going for that, now all these big schools have this big online education and do it in a very big, grand way. So it's economics that these things come up, but otherwise quality of education you can't guarantee. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and they'll work on certain things to this, that, or you have to come and spend some time there, you know, or you have to take your final exams there, or so. That way, then they started to regulate it. But the initial was they didn't want to get involved because it won't have the same teacher-to-student interaction that they felt was valuable to the educational process. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is that if they understand that by getting a by applying the Vedic principles, it will adjust the social anomalies that are there, that are, you know, a big problem in society. Okay, to establish the complete Vedic culture and value system in ISKCON communities, due to which the Varnas ashrams naturally develop. Or to apply the rules of ashram Varna as much as possible to realize Vedic culture and the extent it is necessary to make Varna ashram work. Ashram means complete application or as much as possible. You can only do as much as the people can handle. If you do more than that, you won't get the right result. You know, as I wasn't really discussing. I don't know, it's this page here. The essential point means the essential point is Krishna consciousness. And then within that, then you have to know what's the essential point of Varna and Ashram. So in Varna, you're dealing with, Brahminical is study and teaching. Kshatriya is protection. Vaishya is economics, right? Generating money, giving in charity. Shudras is assisting the other three without complaining. Right? That's the essence of that. So in your Ashram, Dharma, then standards of cleanliness, respect, performance of duties, control of the senses, proper work ethic. These are the essential points, like that. So those are established to as much detail as people can apply, then it's done. So it's, if protection is a thing, so it has to be done to protect. So that gets all the way down to fine details of spies and spies on spies and, you know, like that. So, but that's a detail, but if the principle has to be there, devotees jump in and think, okay, we have to do it like this by the external form. No, you have to understand the internal mood of it, and then from there, add on as much form as you can connect. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what you're doing. So success is by, does that make sense? In other words, there's a principle that says, let's like take, for example, now, music. So you have somebody who is able to, they have a very nice sounding voice, and they can present it very nicely, can apply it to the song very nicely. So So that would be your natural, what you look for, right? But you do have people who are very famous singers who their voice, the quality of their voice isn't actually very good, but they can apply it to the music very well. So it's still accepted.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the point. Or let's say someone who would be, you know, on the stage. Now if they look very attractive, then, and they can act well, then you would say that's good. But there are actors who don't look good, but because they act well, it works. So that means the central principle is always more important. If you catch that, then how much you have of the detail you can apply, that's good. Yeah. You know, so does that make sense? So it's a matter of how much you apply what you know to that central principle, and it works. So someone can cook very simply, but because they understand cooking, it works. And someone cooks in a very elaborate way, but it still works because the central point of cooking is what's... Does that make sense? That's what you're doing. So you extend according to their ability. Is the only option a Daiva Varnashram community, which is isolated from the challenges of the modern world, that is self-sufficient, simple, and based on agriculture and crafts? Agriculture, crafts, what does that mean, based on? This is a very, very major, I would say, underlooking. Because agriculture and crafts, we included which varnas? Yeah, so where is administration and education? So when we say it's agrarian based, means that's where the production of the elements that are used for the economic field, they're produced there. But it doesn't mean that itself is varnashram. No, because that's only economics.
Yeah.
Agriculture and crafts, because mano doesn't start with that. It means the fact that you've gone through mano. These 12 chapters, 6 chapters are just on ashram. Then of these other 6 chapters, then three chapters will be on kshatriyas. Because the first 6 are on Brahmins, then 3 chapters on Kshatriyas, then half a page on Vaishyas, and 2 verses on Shudras.
Yeah.
So that's the natural proportion. Right? But we take that half page and 2 verses, in other words, a third of the page, and we make that the whole basis of Varnashram. That's why it hasn't worked up to now. Because the approach is, the approach isn't broad enough, it doesn't include enough. Because unless people are educated, so education, so Varnashram starts by education. Unless you have Brahmins, you can't have Varnashram, that's all. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. You have Brahmins, Brahmins can train Kshatriyas. As soon as Kshatriyas are there, they create the environment. Vaishyas and Shudras you don't have to create, you absolutely just don't. You don't have to worry about that at all. You know, they're going to do that automatically. You know? So if the environment is a protected environment where someone feels that they can prosper, they'll automatically come. You don't have to do anything else. Does that make sense? So the focus is on Brahminical. Daiva Varnashram is, do you want to put in effort to create Varnashram for karmis? Do you want to put in the effort? So in reality, the only thing is Daiva Varnashram. Because in reality, all there is actually is Daiva Varnashram. If you take Daiva Varnashram and don't see its connection to Krishna, that's Asura Varnashram. The form of it is exactly the same. So since you're going to go to all that work, why not understand the self aspect of self-realization? Why waste the human form of life, since that's what it's meant for? So there is only Daiva Varnashram, really. You know, just like there is only God in His creation. You know, but people ignore that. That's why you call it material. If you don't ignore God, it's not material, right? It's the external energy, but it's not material. To what degree can a Daiva Varnashram community be formed in a city? Very easily. It'll be easier probably to form the Daiva Varnashram in the city than in the country. Why? Because probably 99.99%, I would have added one or two more nines, but you know, just to not make anyone feel bad, are city people that wouldn't have a clue what to do with a clod of dirt, you know, except, you know, very vigorously wash it off your shoes because it's a real annoyance, you know. So, therefore, it would be easier to establish Varnashram in the cities. Now, most people who are pro-Varnashram won't understand this because they think unless you're out in the country with the land and cows, it's not Varnashram. No, that's the best manifestation. That's the recommended. That's the natural form of Varnashram. But the point is trade is also the nature of vices, right? And so cities work on trade. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, what's the problem? And for a Shudra, it doesn't matter if they're sitting in the countryside or sitting in the city. It's the same thing. You know what I'm saying? So, in one sense, it's easier to establish there. As it becomes established and people appreciate, then naturally they'll work back. But if you take a city person, stick them out in the countryside, and hand them a shovel, and say, you know, go thou forth and prosper, then it won't work. You know what I'm saying? Because then if we say agriculture and crafts, okay, then if that was the thing, who should be the head of the community? If it's agriculture and crafts, who would be the natural head of the community? The best farmer.
Yeah.
So is that how it is? No. Who's on the top? Whoever's good with administration or money. Right? So that's how it works. So the point is that if it's an agricultural community, then that's there. But if we're saying Varnashram, that's an aspect of Varnashram, but that's not the complete manifestation. That is a natural, that's called the village. So it would be that way. But it doesn't work off taxes and all that. So there is some management, but it's management for economics. You know what I'm saying? So like that, like you see all the small kings, but they're vaishyas. They're not actually kshatriyas. Like Nandamaharaj is a vaishya, he's not a kshatriya. So he manages the community so that the prosperity of the economics goes on nicely. But that's the point. It's not the event. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's simpler, it doesn't have all the administrative aspects. So one can set it up like that, but Nanda Baba, who has more cows than Nanda Baba, right? No, nobody. That's why he's king. Right? So the best at producing prosperity in the countryside, that person's the king. But instead we'll always have a city slicker. Guaranteed. You know, nobody's going to tolerate that the guy that's covered from head to toe with mud is going to sit there and tell all these city people what to do. Right? He can't even dress nicely. He doesn't talk nicely. He's a bit of a ruffian, you know, like that. These examples are quite gross. And they're always about farming and nature. You know, why can't he use some more sophisticated, upbeat kind of, you know, examples? Like I remember once there was a meeting of GBC men, and they were discussing this one particular aspect. And this devotee who was involved is a vaishya. Like he knows cows like anything. He's really good at farming. And when he talked, after he finished talking, it's kind of like they asked him to leave the room. And then they all asked each other, did anybody understand what he said? Because it was so rustic how he spoke, you know, that nobody understood what he was talking about. So they all decided that he wasn't going to be the one, because they were discussing education, so he's definitely not going to be the head of the educational, you know, how you say, development, like that. So. This doesn't make sense. So this is the promise is that we go to the country, but we take the city with us. Does that make sense? So it's just, so to be able to develop varnashram in the cities isn't actually a difficulty. It will be easier, actually. Once it's understood and people understand the format, how it functions, then they'll probably be able to give the farmers more credibility like that. You know, and when they say we plant, this season we plant potatoes and we plant them now, then they won't say, well, no, but first we have to have a meeting and discuss amongst the board on whether, you know, that's what we want to do. You know, they'll know that, okay, if we want to farm, then the farmers know how to do it. You know what I'm saying? We'll be able to discriminate. But the point is the Vedic system is so nice, you can, wherever, if it's, especially if it's Daivya Varnashram, you start anywhere, you'll get the rest of it. It's just a matter of what you have to go through to get it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the Is it necessary and possible to introduce varnashram into the external society? Why? If yes, what are the conditions and steps of leading to it? The main thing that's already there, what needs to be introduced, is the brahminical understanding. So simply we have to introduce the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and the people who are already there and let them do it. Because what we're trying to do is create administration and a manager which we may not have, or create a business which we don't have. But all you have to do is make a businessman Krishna conscious and let him do his job, let him make an administrator Krishna conscious. Right? There's already tons of those who are inclined towards the political activities and make them Krishna conscious. Right? Then they do it. Does that make sense? Like the hospital in Bombay, why is that there? Right? Because, you know, some temple devotees thought it would be great to have a hospital. No, because all the devotees who were doctors thought, why work in so many different clinics? We could all work together. So they created it. You know what I'm saying? Otherwise, why, what would the temple president know about, you know, what kind of bedpan to buy, or, you know, how to, you know, make the toilet, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, even the toilets, I think, were 60 hours of discussion amongst, you know, all these devotees who were all, you know, doctors. You know, exactly what would be the elements to consider of a patient using the toilet. So that was 60 hours, you know, and then from that they created what they considered the best possible toilet for a, you know, so. And that's because doctors are making it. Now if it's Vaishyas that were running the place, they might not do that. They call in some professional, pay them that, and then that's it. And they wouldn't worry about it.
Thank you very much. It was very, very, very useful.
Okay. Now, do we need the 5-minute break here?
Yes.
Okay, so then we'll take a 5-minute break and then we'll start with the others. Upanishads and Ramayana and Bhagavad Tattva and all these things. Okay, Jaya Shri Prabhupada Ki.
Yeah. Yeah.